You know how to book flights and hotels. All you're missing is a tool to plan the travel experiences you'll have once you arrive. That's why you need Viator. Book guided tours, excursions, and more in one place. There are over 300,000 travel experiences to choose from, so you can find something for everyone. And Viator offers free cancellation and 24/7 customer support for worry-free travel. Download the Viator app now and use code Viator10 for 10% off your first booking in the app. Find travel experiences for you. Do more with Viator.
When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
Welcome to the Gravity Leadership Podcast. Gravity Leadership is a growing network of people who believe the center of the Christian life is the love of God revealed in Jesus Christ, and that learning to take love seriously is vital for how we practice discipleship, mission, and leadership. The Gravity Leadership Podcast explores, in practical ways, how to root our lives and our leadership in this love that holds all of us and everything together.
Hey, welcome back to the bonus coverage of the Gravity Leadership Podcast. Ben and Christy and I are here, and you are going to hear, we said on Tuesday, this is like the first ever time a guest has invited us to come back onto our own podcast, and she's decided to lead it.
Yeah, basically, that's kind of what she did, yeah.
And we said, okay.
So, that was good.
Yeah, I mean, Melinda Mingo leads these conversations. She basically teaches people how to listen and learn.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Yeah.
Which,
yeah.
You know, you think people would know that. You think right. We'd know that. But we don't.
We don't.
Mm. We don't.
We don't. And so, she models it so well.
She does. Mm. This is her gift. So she asks us questions, and she listens to us, and she learns about us. And then we learn because someone is taking an interest in who we are and what we're doing.
Yeah.
So that's what you're going to hear today.
Yeah. It was fun.
It was
fun. Right.
And Christy, you're getting to know Melinda
Christy's
in
friend.
Person as
I'm
well.
Christy's friend, Melinda Joy Mingo. That's what I'm going
to Christy's friend.
MJ.
Now. Yes.
MJ.
We're
close enough, I can call her MJ.
MJ. Wow. Well, you are high status. All right. Here's the interview.
Dr. Melinda Joy Mingo, MJ, welcome back to the Gravity Leadership Podcast.
Thank you. I'm happy to be back.
Last time we talked with Dr. Mingo about her book, and her book is all about having crucial conversations, cross-cultural, cross-ethnic conversations, and developing the capacities and the competencies to do that well. And then after we got done recording, MJ was like, hey, how about we have a crucial conversation? And we were all like, that would be awesome. What does that mean?
She we said, don't know what it means, though.
You'll find out. You'll find
I'm
out.
Excited.
So, MJ, why don't you set this up for us? What are we going to do? And then let's do it.
Yes. So, first of all, thank you for having me back and trusting me, even though you don't know me that well, but trusting me enough to have me back. And so I want to set it up. We were talking about just in today's culture and how people of color sometimes are invited into rooms, and we call it invited to the table, you know, to share, and so that people want to learn, and people want to learn. And while we definitely appreciate that sometimes, one of the things that I said is, I feel that I'm a little bit weary of being invited to tables where the menu has been set. When I go into a room, I'm told what we're going to talk about. It's already been decided how we're going to talk about it, who is in the room. And then I'm basically asked to share my stories or my experiences. And I recently just had a thought, and I said, it's beginning to be a bit painful for me because I go into a room and I think, wow, we probably shouldn't even started the conversation like that. We didn't get to know each other or anything, or you want to hear my stories and my lived experiences. But when I share my lived experiences, they're always pretty much measured by what other people have gone through or what it shouldn't be like. So I thought, I had a great time with Christy, Matt, and Ben, and I just thought, what about if we model something just for a little bit here, you know, if I came back on. And so we have a table, but this time the table, again, and not that I wouldn't even trust being here with Matt, Ben, and Christy, but what if they would allow me to lead a table today where it would be a table where we wouldn't just talk about what's happening in life, but we get to know each other. And so I came this morning with two great questions I thought about that we could talk about. And it's in light of the book that I wrote, The Colors of Culture, The Beauty of Diverse Friendships, and the reality that I believe, again, a lot of what we see happening in our world today, or especially in our nation, is a result of fear and people not knowing each other. Yeah. We don't. We know each other through a meeting. I'm in meetings more than most people, as a professor, pastor, all of that. But after the meetings, we go home. We go somewhere else and we don't get to know each other. And I am thoroughly convinced that the only way we will really actually be unifiers and be cultural bridge persons, or a term that I use, which is cultural champions in this nation, is that we take time to be a little uncomfortable and getting to know each other. So that's the context of the table and us coming together, where the menu is not necessarily set by the same people. Because the last thing I'll say for that, sometimes people will say, well, we're tired of hearing the same stories. And so my response is, if you're tired of hearing the same stories, you've got to change the storytellers. The stories are not going to change if we have the same people in the same room. It's kind of the metaphor of fish going from one aquarium to the next. So I thought, what about a good time of us getting to know each other? So I have a question here that I like for each of you. I have two. But my first question is, it's a thinking question of, if each of you were invited to stand before a crowd, a stadium of people. So it's a stadium of people, all ethnicities, all walks of life, people who come from different backgrounds, socioeconomic classes, whatever it may be, gender. And they are coming because they want to hear something different about what's going on in the world today. And so the title of your talk is The Value, Worth, and Dignity of Every Person. And so you, I would like for you not to give the talk, of course, but what would be some highlights of what you would say to a stadium full of people who are saying, how do we learn how to value people? What do you do to show dignity to people? How do people learn about their worth through your life?
Wow, that's a great question. And I'm going to say that Matt and Ben get to go first.
Oh, Christy, wow.
And I can even share too, because I want it to be where we get to learn about each other. Yeah. And so I'll actually go first, and I'll just say, if I was invited into that crowd, I think that I would really just start with the fact that value is not something that we can make a person feel. You know, what I would say is value is how we connect with people, and then they will feel that. Mm-hmm. I will just say to everybody in that stadium, you got to realize something. It doesn't matter whether you have $5 in your pocket, whether you're wealthy, you all have value. Number one, we are believers. And so I'm thinking that I would just say, even if the people were not believers, I basically would say your worth is not determined by how people see you necessarily, by even sometimes how you see yourself, that you have to see yourself in a different way.
It's good.
Wow. Well, I can venture into these waters, even though I'm a little bit, as you mentioned earlier, MJ, I'm a little bit uncomfortable but I'm okay with you making me uncomfortable.
I'm okay with you making Ben uncomfortable too.
Yeah. Matt loves when I'm uncomfortable. I'm not okay with Matt making me uncomfortable. That's why I draw the boundary.
I even have rescue boats.
So. Oh, there's a rescue boat. Don't tell me about it yet. I'm about to dive in. Okay. All right. Well, I am curious about what your rescue boat is. This is great. Something that comes to mind for me, MJ, in regards to this, is I think something that I've been learning to do in the last several years, which is especially for those who have been marginalized. I'm thinking of people of color, thinking of women, that I've been learning how important it is to listen and to validate emotion and experience. Even if, I think what I used to do in the past was to, try to discern, like immediately discern, like, well, is that true? Is that emotion rooted in something real? And that kind of thing. And what I ended up doing was unintentionally gaslighting people, I think, because I was trying to convince them that their experience wasn't true, even if there was some discernment to make, you know, on the other side of that, like, well, you know, I don't know if that person was actually trying to do that to you. And so one of the things, as far as like dignity and worth, that I'm learning how to do with, you know, people really close to me actually right now, is there's a way of validating experience and emotion as experience and emotion, as just saying like, yeah, that sounds really hard. That sounds of course you'd feel that way. That makes total sense to me. And then, you know, later on, maybe we can get to discerning whether or not that's rooted in reality or what that, maybe that's what that person meant, or, you know, all of that kind of thing. But I think that for me, I'm trying to learn. I'm not very good at it yet, but I'm trying to learn how to make my first move a move of connection and empathy and saying, validating experience and emotion in the other person, especially people who have traditionally been marginalized, whether their experiences, emotions have been invalidated or argued with. And I've been part of that. I've been complicit in doing that to people close to me. So that's what comes to mind as you ask that question.
Wow, that is phenomenal. I was just sitting here shaking my head, honestly thinking, I'm taking notes so that I can just do a recap. That is seriously phenomenal. It touched my heart. And I would say that if I was sitting in that stadium and you said that, right away, whatever you said after that, I'd be willing to listen. Anything else that you said after that, because for me, my first thought is you're not here to negate my pain or what I say. Hey, this hurt me when the person said this. You said here to listen and validate emotions and experiences and not to gaslight. What does gaslighting mean, Ben?
Yes. Good question, MJ. Gaslighting is a term used for... and I've been learning that you can do it unintentionally. So it's oftentimes used for the intentional sort of invalidating of someone's experience, basically like trying to convince them that what they think happened didn't happen. And so oftentimes it happens unintentionally, I think, when, I mean, for me in conversations, if I feel triggered by something somebody says and I get defensive and I start arguing with them about what they just shared with me, that can unintentionally gaslight their experience because now we're arguing about whether or not it's valid that they felt hurt or angry rather than just acknowledging, oh, of course you felt angry, you know, and then we can proceed from there. So
that's great. I heard that help. It does. Yeah. And I knew, but I wanted the audience to know just in case.
It's good call. Maybe not everybody knows what that is.
Because I heard this statement that never ridicule a pain that you have not experienced. It's easy to say, get over something, you know? And so that's just really great. I mean, listening and validating. And I'll just say this quickly. I was sharing one day with someone about my experiences of moving to a predominantly white state, Colorado, where the African-American percentage is 6%. It was 12, and so I went down to 6%. Mm-hmm. And was sharing just how I have to be a bicultural person to make it in this state. And what I mean is that a lot of people don't know some of the songs that I know, some of the Black artists or whatever it may be. So I'm immersed in a white culture. I go into restaurants here and this very easily, I'm the only Black person sitting in a huge restaurant. It's normal that you don't see another African-American person. And as I was saying that, someone did a gaslighting and they said, oh, well, I've been the minority too in situations. I said, I totally understand that, but you just devalidated my pain of me trying to share with you as a friend why sometimes I feel lonely. So thank you for that.
Yeah. Can I just point out something I noticed about that, MJ?
Yes.
I wonder if that person's intent wasn't to build a bridge to your pain and to say, I've experienced pain like that. Like that was their attempt at empathy, but because they tried to emphasize the similarity without appreciating the difference, they actually did the opposite to you that they wanted.
That is phenomenal. That is true, Matt. That's really good. I mean, and because it reminds me of a training I did last week, and we were just talking about, again, experiences, and people came, they said they wanted to learn. And so we were sharing that many times people of color become weary sharing because it's always get over it. You know, the playing field is equal kind of thing. But that whole similar thing, the lady said, I understand what you mean, MJ, because I was jumped by a group of Black girls when I was like a teenager. And I wasn't talking about being jumped by white people. I was talking about a life of experiences. So that's really true. Mm. Yeah. Thanks, Matt. That was great.
I'd like to take a stab at answering your question, but now I'm thinking about so many other great things, I forget your great question. Could you restate it?
Yes, I can. So you have been invited into this huge stadium. People from all walks of life, race, ethnicity, background, socioeconomic status, and they are coming to hear something that's going to help them understand what their value and worth is. And a lot of them are marginalized people in the stadium. A lot of them have been dismissed. So what would you say? What would be your words or encouragement that you would say to them?
Yeah, so you made a statement at the beginning, MJ, like if you're tired of the stories being told, then you need to get new storytellers. I would want to communicate that I'm interested in knowing the stories of how you've experienced a lack of dignity and a lack of worth. So I think I want to understand the ways in which personally and corporately you have internalized the messages that you don't matter, that you don't have value, that you don't have worth, that there is no dignity. And just listen. Like, just listen to those stories. So, I mean, that's what occurs to me.
Yes.
Before I'd have anything to say, I want to hear stories, which is awkward because when you're on a huge stadium stage, you don't really get a chance to talk to people one-on-one. But that's what occurs to me.
Mm-hmm. And then, again, as you're standing there, you know, whenever you're speaking, you come down off a platform, there's always people who have connected to something you've said. And so they'll be waiting for you because you said from that platform, I'm interested in knowing your stories and how you have experienced a lack of dignity and even internalized that. So Matt, you now have 15 people who are standing down there saying, hey, I want to get coffee with you. I would like to share some things with you and all. And then you start meeting with people and you realize that you have some similar things that have happened to you, that you have experiences where you not had dignity, where even as a white male, people have talked about you or shamed you, right? And so how would you try to bring that in without devalidating that too much?
Yeah, MJ, I hear what you're saying. So how do I not do what that person did to you accidentally?
Mm-hmm. Yes.
Yeah, I hear that.
Yeah. But yet they still need to know that you are a human being as well, and that you too have some stories that maybe would help them as well.
Yeah. You know, maybe I'll just ask you, MJ, like, is it enough to acknowledge the differences? And is it, so let's say it's a Latina woman.
Mm-hmm.
Is it enough for me to say, as a white guy living in America, I have no idea, really, how your race and your gender play into you feeling devalued, or how just living here maybe is eroding your dignity on a day-to-day basis. Like, I don't know if I can bridge that gap experientially. But your story makes me think of the times in my life when I've doubted my self-worth, and the times in my life when I have felt like I don't matter. And so just the drops of that experience in my heart, I feel like it opens me up to you more.
Yeah, that's really good, because it's true. So sitting with someone and saying, I'm interested in hearing your stories. And even I say this sometimes to people, I probably can't connect to maybe anything you're saying, but I want to listen. I want to validate you as a person. And I even want to sit here to say that even though I haven't experienced your pain, I'm acknowledging it. I'm not devaluing it. And so it's exactly what you said, Matt. And then at that point, you know, that's how friends, how people become friends from different cultures and walks of life. It's not trying to say, oh, yeah, I had that experience too. Yeah, I went through that. It's listening. And a person said, man, thank you just for listening. I wasn't even trying to get an answer. I just wanted you to listen. And you took time out of your day to listen, to care enough for me. That meant everything.
You know, I'm noticing me, I don't know, Ben, Christy, you notice this, or if this is just me, I'm happy to just own this for me. But when I hear somebody tell a story of such like awful things happening to them, I feel anxious about it. Like I want to make it better for them. I want to resolve it for them. I want to do something about it for them. Maybe this feeling, if I put the best possible spin on it, like I want to make the world right for them. Maybe the worst possible spin on it is like, I feel a little complicit or guilty and I want to resolve my own guilt. You know what I mean? Like, and I'm not sure I would know which one it is. I could tell myself any virtuous story I want to believe. But like, I think there is an anxiety present in listening to a story that doesn't comport with the dominant frame you use to navigate the world.
Of course. I mean, I even feel that way. I mean, when I'm in other countries and I'm an American, for instance, when I was in Vietnam and I'm listening to stories of pain, you know, and looking at their buildings and mildewed and, you know, the things they've gone through with the war. And I'm just sitting there, even as a Black woman from America, I've had experiences, but I didn't even bring all that in. I'm just like, you know, let me listen to you. You know, I don't need to bring up. I was raised in the Cabrini Green Projects. I understand poverty. And what both you, Ben, and Matt said, which is so true, is that we don't have to try to bring in similar things to try to validate somebody else's pain. We really don't. I mean, so I would just listen in Vietnam and I'd just be anxious too, thinking, oh my gosh, what can I do? And then what I realized the second year in Vietnam is, they wanted to feel loved by somebody, somebody who cared enough to listen, somebody who they were not expecting me to go and change their world in Vietnam. They wanted just a few minutes with somebody who cared enough to listen.
This podcast is brought to you by Gravity Leadership Academy, our 10-month online training intensive for Christian leaders who want to root their life and leadership in God's love and bring lasting transformation to their culture. In Gravity Leadership Academy, you'll learn the real-life practicalities of how to notice God's presence and activity in and around you so you can participate more fully in God's life and mission and open up space for those around you to do so too. We've worked really hard to make this training in missional leadership practical and doable. To find out more about Gravity Leadership Academy, visit gravityleadership.com/academy.
MJ, that is kind of, as you all are talking and thinking of the possibility, like if all of these people are in one place and I had one thing I could say, that is what I would want to say, is that you are loved, because I think it's foundational. And I understand that maybe not everyone in that stadium would be a Christian or someone who is a person of faith, but I still believe that that is the foundation of what humanity is hungering for, that they are longing to know that they have love from God, and that their identity gets to be wrapped up in that love, not based on anything other than that. I'm not sure. I think I've told Matt this story, but a year ago, we were in the midst of when George Floyd was murdered, and our city put on a kid protest to teach kids how about protests and what it was. And my family went, and I wanted my kids. I have two adopted kids who are Hispanic, and I wanted them to, I don't know, to feel like they had a sense of belonging that was beyond just my family, my immediate family. And so we went, and of course at the protest, 16-year-old girl comes up and does this speech, and it was great. And at the end, a woman says, okay, any child, any kid can come up and say whatever they want. And my youngest stood up and starts walking towards the microphone. And I, as a parent, I was like, oh my word, what is he going to say? Like, this is terrible. I'm like, baby, what are you going to say? What are you going to say? And he's just like beelining it to the microphone. He gets up to the microphone. The lady looks at me, and I'm like, I don't know. And he says, dear Jesus, I pray that everyone here, no matter the color of their skin, feels loved. Mm. Amen.
So
and
beautiful.
Obviously, it was not a, you know, it's not a Christian protest, but everyone so started beautiful. Clapping. And,
yes.
And I was like, that is what I mean. Because we all are sinners and we're all loved. We're all yes. broken and we're all yet welcomed by God. We're all, you know, wounded and yet we're all cherished. We're all human and yet we can all be a friend of Jesus. And to know that we are loved seems so core and so foundational that that's what I want people to know and to hear and what I want to say.
Oh, that's beautiful, because it is it. It's the core. And, you know, sometimes I think with all the things that are going on in our society today, issues, you know, different things that have cropped up, the one thing that I say personally, love is not weak. One of the strongest things is love. I may not be able to articulate, you know, an experience. I may not be able to even identify with another person's experience. But one thing that love does, love bridges the gap between any place or any person. It just does. And it's huge. It is really mm-hmm. huge. I mean, it is. Thank you all. Are you feeling, I'm feeling pretty good. Do I need to pull out any rescue boats? Are you good? These are great.
No, I'm good. I got my bathing suit on. I'm swimming.
Yes. Yeah, we're swimming. Okay.
Just treading water,
know,
probably.
I know. You guys are surfing. These are great. I'm like, this is my last one here is number one. Tell me one fun thing that I would like to learn one fun thing about you.
Wow. Ben, go
one
for it.
One fun thing. All right. I'll go. Yes. I'll go first. So one fun thing about me is that we never had a pet growing up. We had a dog when I grew up, we had a dog, but, like my family that, my wife and I and our kids, we never really had pets. I'm allergic to cats. And so like, we just never thought it was in the cards. And a few years ago, it was about 4 years ago, five years ago now, we started thinking about getting a dog, a little hypoallergenic dog, that kind of thing, for our family. And, I didn't want to get the dog, but, because I was afraid that I'd be allergic to it and then I'd break everybody's heart. Right. So everybody, we get the dog and everybody's loves the dog. And I'm like, guys, I can't live with the dog. And they'll be like, they'll kick me out of the house and keep the dog. You know, that was my fear. But anyway, so we got this dog, and I'm not allergic to it and it's great. Her name is Edith. So I have a dog named Edith is maybe the fun thing about me. She weighs 8 pounds and she's a tiny little thing. And I actually like fell head over heels in love with this dog. I really like our dog. She's really, really sweet. I never anticipated myself becoming a dog person, but now like I see dogs all the time now, like just driving around, walking around, and I'll commonly like remark to my wife, just like, hey, look, there's a good dog.
There's a dog.
Another good dog.
There's another good dog.
They're all good dogs. I became a dog person in my 40s.
Wow.
That's a fun thing about me.
Similar thing that I want to say is I became a cat lover in my 40s.
Did you?
Yes. Never liked cats, sneezing and all that stuff.
Yeah, yeah.
Then someone went to a pet shop and bought a cat for me and brought it to me. I go, oh, God. So I had to keep it. Had to keep the cat and fell in love with that cat. Mm-hmm. And I was like, taking videos. I'm like, this is my cat. His name was Abraham. Mm-hmm. And I said, it meant a lot to me that I was able to move into something, to love something that I never thought that I would love before.
Yeah. That's sweet. You and my wife would get along. She's still kind of a cat person. She loves cats.
There you go.
Get rid of them to marry me, though. So.
There you go. Matt.
Yes, there's so many fun things about me. I sit all day and I read books and I take myself too seriously. Let's see. My daughter is a little bundle of creative, spontaneous joy.
Oh.
And she refuses to connect with me on my terms. And it's like really good for me.
Uh-huh.
So here's some of the ways she presses me into fun. she will speak to me in ways that like make my Christian dad and proper relationship with daughter like sirens go off. But if I give her back like her sarcasm and like her like jokey thing, she completely opens up and we have a blast.
Uh-huh.
So I think she's teaching me not to be so rigid and take myself so seriously.
Yeah.
So she teaches me a lot of fun. She also, like, her favorite thing in the world to do is to wait behind doors and jump out and scare me when I'm not expecting it. And she does that, like, literally she'll hide for 10, 15 minutes. And sometimes I get a little stressed out, you know, part of that being serious and taking myself too seriously. And when she scares me, like rage pulses through my body, MJ. Like I am terrified and then I'm enraged. Now here comes the fun part. But then I make a decision usually to do it back to her. Fun thing about me is my 9-year-old does crazy, wacky, spontaneous things with me, including like wrestling matches right before bed, which, you know, makes her mom really excited because she's supposed to calm down. But that's, you know, that's the time we get physical and other things like that. So that's a fun thing about me. My 9-year-old teaches me how to have fun.
Yeah, and that's great. And I love it. And she scares you.
She terrifies me.
She's good, good. I'm glad. She pulls it out. Good. I'm going to send her a gift.
She made up this game called Hide and Hide and Sneak. That's what she calls it. And hide and sneak is where you hide. It's like hide and seek. And then it's a contest to see if the hider can be found or if the hider can scare the seeker first.
Ah.
So, you know, so like I've never been terrified playing hide and seek before, but playing with her, I'm like very, very trepidatiously looking in places because she usually wins, usually scares me.
and so I'll put it in, I love that. And I'll put it in the cultural context. Isn't it interesting that when we connect with people from different cultures, again, what's fun in one culture may not be in another. Like, oh, we're going to go and we're going to go up into the bamboo trees and we're going to climb up in the rainforest. And I go, oh, I'm claustrophobic. Go, no, come on. You have to go, MJ. And I'm having a severe panic attack and I do it anyway. And I go up there and I realize that a lot of my fears come from the fact that I've never really even been invited to do something different. Christy.
Man, I'm sitting here thinking, I don't know what to share. but I guess this is what I'm going to share. Because I just told this story this week. When I was, before my senior year of high school, I went to Jamaica. And I was on a all summer long, stayed there, worked at an orphanage and helped build part of a church and this whole thing. Anyway, they had a group of guys that were playing soccer And I played soccer in high school. And I asked the coach if I could play. It was all boys. And he said no. And I kind of was persistent. I was like, come on, let me play, let me play. They were often playing at like prisons and places where I wasn't really able to go. But one time they had this time that they were going to have a game, and they asked a semi-professional Jamaican team to play against them. And they were going to have this, like, you know, big rally thing. So I bugged the coach. Come on, coach, please let me. And he's like, all right, you can dress, but I can't promise you'll play. I'm like, all right, all right. So first half, we're like, you know, 0-0. And it's a couple minutes before the half, and I am just egging the coach to let me in. Like, I just am like, come on, coach, let me in, let me in, let me in. It's the only time I can play. Finally, like 2 minutes before the half, he's like, all right, go ahead. You can go in, Christy. And so I go in, and within like 7 seconds, I get tripped in the box, which, if you know soccer, means that you get a penalty kick. Yeah. And so our captain like lines me up, and here's the deal. I was like 5 foot. I'm like 5'2" now. I've really grown a lot since then. but I was 5 foot, and the goalie was 6'3". I mean, his arms were like ginormous, go-go gadget arms. And my captain came up to me, and he like looked me in the face, and he's like, you can do this, you know? Okay, okay. So I back up, and I just run, and I kick it, and it goes perfectly in the right corner, and I scored against a semi-professional Jamaican goalie.
Wow.
And I made the front page. I was in the newspaper. They were like, yes. Wow. And the news was like, I mean, little newspaper, but it was like my one claim to fame, and it was so fun. And it was like this crazy high of, I love soccer and I love scoring, but then the challenge of it, it was fun.
That's so awesome. Cool. Well, I know our time is kind of wrapping up, and I'll have to hand it over here. But one quick thing here, the last thing for our table here is quickly, what assumption do you think people have about you because they don't know you? I'll say one about me. I feel that one assumption people have is because I have, you know, a PhD and all that, that there are certain people that I want to be around all the time or whatever. And yet the reality is I was homeless while I had a PhD, sleeping in my car, writing this book while I was sleeping in the parking lot of a Walmart. And so people who know me now know that, but the assumptions is certain things bring certain things. If I can use that. Okay. Yep. All right. Quick round. Assumption, Matt.
Oh, gosh. I think people assume that, oh, gosh, I don't know. Maybe I'll share this. People assume that I make jokes because I'm funny. I don't know. Or trying to be funny. And actually, I make jokes, I think, because I learned that was a way to protect myself.
Mm-hmm. Totally get it.
And so it's a habit that I developed to survive that now sometimes is fun to do. But it wasn't like just because I'm happy-go-lucky. It actually is the opposite. I was really scared, and the only way I could ensure my safety was to change the emotional temperature of a room through a joke.
Wow, that's powerful. Jeez,
I just thought of that. I mean, I just thought of. I think people don't assume that when they hear me tell jokes.
Yeah, no, they're like, "Oh, Matt's funny. He's kind of, you know."
Matt likes to try to be funny, I think, is what people
say. Tries to be funny, honey. Yeah. All right. Yeah, that's just Ben, this is great.
Okay, all right. So probably one thing that people assume about me is that I present as pretty even keel in most situations. But that, much like Matt's humor, was also probably a survival mechanism for me. And so I think people assume that I don't feel insecure, anxious, afraid, angry. But I do.
Wow.
Quite often.
Yeah. That's powerful. Yeah. There's a lot to that. Yeah. Wow. Christy.
Yeah. I think similar to Ben, I think people assume because I'm a woman pastor, or maybe because I have 5 kids, or I'm not really sure, but there is this messed up thinking that Christy has it all together.
Mm-hmm. I know.
And yes. I don't. Ugh. And that is hard. That's hard. It's really mm-hmm. hard because it's almost like they don't believe I'm human, or they mm-hmm. think I shouldn't be, I don't know, shouldn't be human, but I am.
Totally get it. As a female pastor myself, totally get it. I just want to say, I'm going to leave a word here and then turn it over to Matt here. A few things. Number one, I use a term in my book. I just use it, period. It's called assumed familiarity. And assumed familiarity is that people make assumptions based on someone else who is a little bit familiar to them. For instance, again, I had a Black friend in fifth grade, but that's, you know, whatever. I lived overseas in Africa as a white person, so I know about African Americans, or I know about women pastors. And so the assumed familiarity is what keeps us apart from each other. Yeah. What we did today, I learned so much from you all. I really did. And I could resonate with each one of you. We don't have time. I could resonate with you, Ben, about feeling this kind of anxiousness or whatever, this survival mechanism, a certain way I present myself. I can resonate with you, Matt, you know, the times of just trying to bring lightness to a room, or maybe people take it a different way, and definitely with Christy. And so I just want to leave this with you three. I want to say that some of the things you said here about listening and validating others' emotions and experiences, don't gaslight, don't try to convince whatever people that is not valuable. To have the heart of a learner, I'm paraphrasing that. Trying to learn is having the heart of a learner, that I'm interested in knowing stories of people, and then I'll listen to how they have experienced a lack of dignity or worth, and then I won't try to make a similar story with them. I'll just try to be an intentional person to love and listen. And then Christy said, love. I would always leave people with the fact that they are loved, and that their identity should be wrapped up in love. And so I want to say to the three of you, thank you for allowing me to be at the table here. I've learned a lot about you. I appreciate you trusting me. And I want to say to you, whether they're listeners or whomever, I just want to leave you with this, that you are loved. And the reality about love is that it's not wrapped up in a theory. It's not wrapped up in an application. It's wrapped up in what we did here today, having a chance to get to know each other.
Yeah. Yeah. Thank you, MJ.
Thanks for hosting this conversation.
Yes.
MJ.
So good.
It's a fun idea.
I just want to say we've done 200 plus podcasts. I know because somebody else counted and told me. And this is the first podcast we've done that wasn't our idea.
Ooh.
I love it.
Yeah. And you trusted me. And I feel very honored by that. I sincerely say that.
No, it has been great, MJ. It's been awesome. Thanks for teaching us today. Thanks for hosting, convening this today. And I don't know, maybe we'll do it again sometime.
Yeah. Thank you all.
Thanks for joining us for this episode of the Gravity Leadership Podcast. Our show is produced by Ben Sternke, Matt Tebbe, and Ben Hardman. Aaron Sternke does our mixing and mastering. You can check out his work at aaronsternke.com. If you find our podcast helpful, share it with your friends in person and on social media. And don't forget to rate and review us online, as well as subscribe so you don't miss an episode. You can join our Gravity community for free at gravityleadership.com/join. You'll get our latest content delivered straight to your inbox, as well as an email most Fridays with curated links to articles we found interesting or helpful. To join us, go to gravityleadership.com/join. And hey, we'd love to hear from you. Ask a question, make a comment, send us an idea, a recommendation, recipe, whatever. You can email us at podcast@gravityleadership.com. Catch you next time.
Save big on brunch for mom, all in the Kroger app. Get 16-ounce packs of flavorful Angus 90% lean ground sirloin for $4.99 each with a digital coupon. Then buy two, get two free on 12 packs of delicious Coca-Cola, Pepsi, or 7-Up, all with your card. Shop these deals at your local Kroger today, or tap the screen now to download the Kroger app to save big today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Prices and product availability subject to change. Restrictions apply. See site for details.